Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important you are. If you're listening to this, you are the resistance.
Good morning, Washington. Good morning, Maryland, Virginia, and our wide world in streaming land. This is Gwen McKinney, and the program is Arise. The station is WPFW FM Washington 89.3. And we are here this morning with a lot. I have a big table, and it's already set. We're going to do some pledge drive. I want folks to really stand by with your wallet and your credit cards out. And this is not my forte, but guess what? I know we got to keep the lights on because we do not go to corporate types to fund us. And that means we are free. And when we are free, everything has to be paid for, including the air. So we want you listeners to own the air. I am just so excited because today we have the topic is one of my favorite. It is about this small and mighty nation just 90 miles from Florida shores, Cuba. And the power of Cuba is so amazing that often it boggles my mind how few people know how powerful Cuba is. There is a reason for that, and it has to do with a blockade that has been in place for nearly 60 years. Amazing, amazing. Through successive administrations, a light loosening of the noose during the Obama years, and then here comes Trump, and here comes the tightening of that noose. But despite that, there is light. There is possibility. And one possibility is through the people in Cuba and the people here in the United States. It is my honor to present my dear friend and old friend and compañero, Rosemary Mealy. Good morning, Rosemary. Rosemary, you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Can we hear you a little bit better? You're coming in faintly. I'd like to welcome you to the program. Rosemary and I had an opportunity to spend some time together just last week in Cuba. We were there for this amazing Havana International Book Festival. I think it's the 28th annual book festival. And, Rosemary was there, really, I say, she's modest, but I say a superstar. Her book was translated into Spanish, and she was on a panel during this week-long festival in Havana, which was moving from Havana around the country. Her book, Fidel and Malcolm X, Memories of a Meeting. Rosemary, tell us a little bit about, first of all, the Havana Book Fair. Why is it special?
Yeah, let me just first thank you for inviting me to come on. Can you hear me better now?
I hear you much better now.
Okay, good. The history of the Havana Book Fair is amazing. It really started out, like you said, 27 years ago. Initially, it wasn't at that fort that we went to where thousands and thousands of people came to. It was originally at the convention center. And then over the years, as more and more Cubans began to frequent the book fair, it just outgrew itself at the convention center. And the Cuba Book Fair Committee actually revitalized an old fort and transformed it into that amazing space that you had an opportunity to participate in. So over the years, writers and artists have been invited internationally to come to the festival to join the thousands of Cubans who attend. And each year, Cubans pay tribute to a nation or country book publishing industry. And this year, the tribute went to the book publishing and artists and writers from Algeria. So that was another exciting aspect of the event, as you noted, when we were invited to participate in the opening events of the festival. So as I said, it's grown, and it's just amazing. I always like to tell people it's the biggest literate event in the world. It's just an amazing place, and people would just have to come there to see for themselves what it's like.
And Cuba's an amazing place. I want us to go back, rewind from 2020 to 1960. And that was a heady moment in American history. Lots was happening around the world. Set the stage for us for 1960, Fidel Castro, Harlem, Hotel Teresa, and Malcolm X.
Well, that's a big order in 10 minutes, but let me try to do it. I think when we have to go back a few more years before then, and let's just start in 52 briefly, when there was a military coup in Cuba that suspended the Constitution. And then we ride on into 1953, when Fidel Castro and other revolutionaries actually attacked at this military barracks in Santiago de Cuba. And that was really the beginning of the Cuban Revolution as we know it today. The July 26th movement was born from that battle. So from 55, 56 to 59, the situation in Cuba was just amazing. The people had begun to take control of their destiny. And so by the time Fidel arrived in the United States in 1960, the United States government was extremely hostile towards this new government because, number one, agrarian reform had taken place in the country, putting a limit on land holdings, expropriating the remainder of land that was owned by many U.S. companies. Because, if you know, 75% of the arable land in Cuba during that time was owned by U.S. companies, primarily controlled by the sugar industry. So by the time Fidel arrives in New York with the Cuban delegation, the hostilities that the U.S. government had begun was in full swing. So they arrived for the meeting of the 15th session of the General Assembly in September of 1960. Fidel is greeted at the airport by thousands of well-wishers, and he's to stay at the Shelburne Hotel, which is right near the Cuban mission to the United Nations in downtown Manhattan. When he attempted to do that, the hotel owner demanded this enormous fee for the delegation to stay. And, of course, Fidel especially Fidel felt that this was just another way of the U.S. government and people, companies in the U.S. attempting to undermine the revolution, although they were now officially leaders of their country. So they were actually kicked out of the Shelburne Hotel because they refused to pay this enormous fee that the hotel wanted to impose on them. When that happened, Fidel challenged by saying, okay, well, what we'll do is me and my delegation, we'll just set up tents on the grounds of the United Nations. How embarrassing that would have been, right? But they were ready to do so. Meanwhile, in Harlem, folks are really excited about the Cuban people, Cubans in the U.S., particularly Fidel, and a group of our folk come together that included Malcolm X and other leaders in the Harlem community. So they invited the entire delegation to come to Harlem. And this was so exciting, and the Cubans accepted this invitation. So there they were, national delegation representing a sovereign nation arrives in Harlem, and they're greeted by thousands of well-wishers outside of the Hotel Teresa. For your listeners who know that area, it's 125th Street. And what we now call Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard, and so Frederick Douglass Boulevard. So they arrive at the hotel, and of course there had to be a lot of negotiations going on. The hotel was actually owned by a black man, and he negotiated with some unscrupulous folks led by, all this is in the book that we're going to talk about, led by a wonderful attorney, Conrad Lynn, who is deceased, but he was a great civil rights attorney. And so that's how they ended up coming to Harlem.
So I see the picture, Rosemary, wall-to-wall people in what's called the black capital of the world, Harlem. And so let's contextualize this, because your memory is so crystal, so vivid. There were other people, the oral history in a moment. And there's a lot of aspects of this visit that could have been captured. But what you captured was the meeting, just a snapshot in time, the meeting between Fidel and Malcolm X. And so what happens when a historian, a poet, a journalist, and a political activist get together, Rosemary? What happens?
Okay. Well, you know, I wasn't at the meeting a lot of times. I wasn't even at it.
I know you weren't there. But what happens?
You know, it's a storytelling piece.
I was
challenged when I was asked to put the book together. How do I do this? And the only way to do this was to go to back to the folk who were participating.
Who asked you?
In the event.
Who asked you to put it together?
Okay. In 1990, Cuba, with its whole approach to international solidarity, there's an organization that we went to visit while we were there, Casa de las Americas, organized a conference called Malcolm X Speaks in the 90s. And this was in May of 1990. Well, I helped to organize folk from this country, scholars and activists, to go to that meeting, and there were internationalists, artists, writers, academics, professionals who came to this Malcolm X in the 90s conference, and we had a chance to, I had a chance to actually meet with some of the folk who had come to Cuba, come to the United States with Fidel, and of course Fidel met us, and he laid out how important that meeting was. And so you get this first-hand impression, you hear the voice of one of the main characters who attended the meeting.
And uh-huh. So what you did, you captured oral history, and that's why radio is so powerful and potent even today. Oral history is what you captured. So tell us a little bit about who was involved and how you put this book together. And by the way, a quick public service announcement, Fidel and Malcolm X, Memories of a Meeting, has been published and republished by Black Classic Press and is available by Black Classic Press. That's a public service announcement. Rosemary, tell us a little bit about the book. And we have a few minutes before we go to pledge, but I'd love for you to just share. What's in the book?
Yeah, and it's too bad we didn't know about this, because I could have offered some of these books as premiums, but we'll do that the next time.
Rosemary,
we'll do that the next time.
My engineer, Mike Nostella, says we can still do that, possibly.
All right, well, we'll talk about that after we hang up. Okay.
Okay,
let's go to Harlem. Cuba, Fidel, Harlem, and us. All right, so Fidel arrives in Harlem on the 16th of September with the delegation, and they're quartered in the Hotel Teresa. So that evening on the 16th, Malcolm meets Fidel. It was a brief meeting. They go upstairs together, and there are three black journalists who were allowed to go in with this meeting, and they're the ones who captured actually the photography or the photos that you see. Let me just say that it was a brief meeting. Fidel and Malcolm talked about. Malcolm said, "You know, you've done." And I kind of paraphrase. He told Fidel that after they embraced warmly, "You know, you've done everything in your country that we're struggling here to do." And so, but he warned Malcolm. He warned Fidel to watch out for the powers that be, because they're tricky. And you know, in Malcolm's language, he had a great way of expressing those kind of things. So they talked about the realities of what was happening in the world, and mentioned all the issues that were taking place globally, particularly in Africa, with the anti-colonial struggles. And in the end, Fidel invited Malcolm to come to Cuba, but of course Malcolm was assassinated, and he never got a chance to do that. So, as I said, it was a very, very brief meeting. And actually, the photographer and on both the Cuban and the U.S. side are able to capture it visually the kind of camaraderie, that comradeship that the two men were sharing together. So it, the meeting between Malcolm and Fidel was not an end in itself. It was, in my opinion, it was at the same time a continuation of the heightened militancy of the African-American people of Harlem and their understanding of their position in world history, as well as a milestone in both the lives and development of Malcolm X and Fidel Castro. For those of us who knew about that meeting, or those who expressed the meeting, they talked about conversations that were, in hindsight, were really clear positions of understanding the international situation. And I think that's exactly what the book captures in all of the interviews that I did with people like the late writer Sarah Wright, Brother Elambe Brass, Fidel himself. We also have interviews with Bill Epton. And you know what, one thing, when almost 95% of everyone who's interviewed in the book, they have made their transition. So I'm just really glad that I was able to capture this meeting. It's a small book, but it says a lot.
Rosemary, I was getting ready to say, listeners, Fidel and Malcolm X is a slim book. It's an easy but powerful read. And the people who Rosemary's talking about, Elambe Brass and Mary Baraka, and I mean, the folks who were involved are our heroes. And if we don't capture and preserve those stories, that history won't live for our children. And Rosemary, I can't get passionate enough about that. I think that one of the painstaking aspects of your book is the chronology and the voices. You allow the people to speak in their own voices. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And it's veering off a little bit from traditional writing, you know, in the sense that I'm actually using my training as a radio journalist. I'm actually using some of those skills to capture. It's like a phenomenology study where I get into the heads of the people that I'm interviewing, and I wanted to bring their voices in instead of me writing a book and then quoting or citing. I think that's one of the most important pieces about the format that I use in the book. I'm not quoting anybody. I'm introducing them, and they tell their own stories.
And that's what I love. It's basically storytelling that with no intrusion. You get out of the way. And I think that, again, so if someone, Mike does tell me that we can make arrangements for the book to be part of, he's going to find out. But Rosemary, tell folks again how they can get the book, Black Classic Press. I'll tell them www.blackclassicbooks.com. I'll use you to tell me what was one of the most gratifying aspects of this book? Because that was like 1993. Here we are.
Well, let me just put it this way quickly. You know, the book was published after the conference in 1990, and it was published by a small Australian publishing house, which did not do a lot of PR for me. The book didn't get distributed that well, and it was actually out of print for more than 25 years. And then I kept, you know, pushing around trying to find another publisher, and then I discussed it with Paul Coates of Black Classic Press right there in Baltimore. And Paul agreed to publish the book. So in 2014, the book was republished and repackaged, and it's really great. The photos are great. By the way, I got almost all the photos from Princeton Latino in Cuba. They allowed me to go to their archives. I was able to select the pictures that I wanted. I didn't have to pay for them or anything, and that was just great. There was so much cooperation. And then, of course, a few years ago, I was trying to get the book published again in Spanish, and so we actually put out an unofficial Spanish edition. And I must say this. There's a little school in Maryland called the Maryland International Day School, and there's a sister who runs that school, Esther, who took her entire Spanish language teachers, and they actually translated the book initially in Spanish, and we were able to get out an unofficial translation of it. And so that was another thing that happened. That was exciting when you asked me. And then finally, we get the book published by a Cuban press this year, which is launched.
And and that is so exciting. Rosemary, we got great news. Our station manager grabbed my book. He just said he is going to make sure that we can give your book as a premium. Now, I want to say this, Rosemary, hang with us for a few more minutes. Listeners, we need you to call. You can get a copy of Fidel and Malcolm X Memories of the Meeting.
$65 donation.
A $65 donation will get you a copy of this. And when I say it's potent, believe me, Fidel and Malcolm X, this is powerful. 202-588-9739 or 800-222-9739. Again, 588-9739 locally, or if you're outside of the area, 800-222-9739. Listeners, for $65 pledge, Fidel and Malcolm X, Memories of a Meeting, can be yours. And when I say that, Rosemary, I am so proud and honored to call you a friend and an compañera, because the painstaking effort of putting this book together was, I understand, a labor of love in many ways.
Yes, we never put it out to make any money. That wasn't the idea, you know. So you know how we activists are. I appreciate it, and I really encourage people at WPFW to call in. And I'm, you know, because the station manager did that, I'm going to send him an autographed copy. You tell him I'm going to.
Thank you very much. And, you know, you need to autograph mine. Jerry, give me my book back. He did give me my book back. So I just
call that number. Call that number. Put that number back out there again.
588-9739 and 800-222-9739. And we are with Rosemary Mealy, activist, educator, author, lawyer, phenomenal. She is marathon woman, but most importantly, she is a steadfast friend of Cuba. Rosemary, I want to spend the last little bit of time that we have together. Again, listeners, 800-222-9739. 202-588-9739. We take your credit cards. Please pledge. Please call, because I do not want to look shabby. I'm filling in for Bill Fletcher. I want to at least be able to say that someone pledged $65 and got this powerful Fidel and Malcolm X. Rosemary.
All right, make those calls come in. Let them come in.
Please call, folks. So here's the thing. I want to take this last few minutes I have with you. You talked about Fidel, his indomitable spirit, his courage, his love of the people, his quest for justice. Our phones are ringing. 588-9739, 800-222-9739. Come on, y'all. Ring, call. Get that book, because you will not get this anyplace else in the world. And by the way, Rosemary Mealy is a national treasure, and she is on our air free. We are not paying her. And by the way, you're not paying me either, but you got to pay somebody. Pay the station.
That number. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Rosemary, let's talk about the challenge real quick.
Okay.
The challenge. People, yes. Always, when I came back from Cuba, I've been to Cuba, this was my fourth time, and I've always been with journalist delegations and in official missions. Like, even this last trip was with Black Publishers. We'll have two of them on in the next segment. But Rosemary, people want to go to Cuba.
Yes.
What is the deal? They can't go, can they?
They can go, but there's so many restrictions. There's 11, 12 categories that you can actually travel to Cuba. You can travel to Cuba under the category of people-to-people education, okay? Now, this is what you have to do. You contact, you can go that way. You contact a travel agency or you organize it yourself, and you can actually go there. Because, you know, we're talking about almost six decades. The United States government has imposed an economic blockade against this country, which is only 90 miles away. And, you know, and that reaches the figure of a blockade. I mean, according to the permanent mission of to the United Nations of Cuba, more than $933 billion, $933 billion have been the result of this. And that's not even counting the United States government attempt to sabotage the country.
Well, Rosemary, the thing is, this has been an unbroken, except for that brief period during Obama, unbroken, not only the economic blockade, but the people blockade, the travel blockade. You have to have all of these hoops to jump through to go to Cuba. Now, is there going to be some kind of protest in July? Tell me about that really quickly.
For 50 years, there's been a group called the Vince Ramos Brigade, which has challenged this immoral, illegal blockade. And this year, the challenge that they're going to put forth to people in this country is to organize at least 300 people, just 300 people, to challenge this blockade. And if people would like to participate in this challenge, can I give the number, the contact information?
Yes.
They're going to be leaving. This is in July. There'll be options for you to go as a part of the challenge, or if you can't take the risk of doing the actual challenge, you're going to go anyway. So here's what you do. You should contact V Brigade, that's V as in victory, B-R-I-G-A-D-E, at gmail.com. Okay, that's V Brigade at gmail.com. And you'll be able to get information on how you can become a part of this challenge, because we should be able to go anywhere that we want to go. It's a violation of our human rights that we can't travel. So you can do that. You can become a part of this important challenge to show the U.S. government that we are going to go to Cuba regardless of whether you say we can't go or not, because we're going to go in unity. We're going to go in the thousands. So I encourage everyone to contact the Vince Ramos Brigade. That's vbrigade at gmail.com, and become a part of this global challenge against the U.S. blockade of Cuba by going to Cuba in July. So
and
I think that...
Rosemary, what will people do when they go?
Oh, it's amazing. What they do, it's people to people. Mm-hmm. What they do is they go, you have an opportunity to do some, what I say, it's not even some micro work. You might be... One day you might go into the fields and you might help to plant something, or you could help to prune a tree, or work in an orchard or something like that, or you could help to go in, because you know there was a terrible the country just had a terrible crisis in which a tornado hit. So they're rebuilding the country. In the areas that happened, you might be able to become involved in some kind of volunteer effort there. You have an opportunity to talk to Cubans. Find out from the Cubans who are there what they think of their country. So you might do some symbolic work, you know, and then you're meeting with delegations from other parts of the world. You're meeting with people. You're going to the art museum. You're seeing the culture. I mean, the place is just so full of energy. You're dancing half the night away, and you're doing a people-to-people solidarity. You're showing that as people from this country, you disagree with what this government is doing towards the people of Cuba, the same way that we're disagreeing with what is happening with Venezuela. So, you know, if Venezuela, Cuba next. I mean, Cuba is always on guard. This country will do anything to try to get into Cuba, to turn it back to what it was like before 1959. So, folks, I encourage you to participate in this effort. Again, you contact the V Brigade, VBRIGADE, at gmail.com.
Wrap up. Mike is just livid over there, our engineer. He said, how many books can you give? Because we are, the phones are hopping. 588-9739, 800-222-9739. And guess what, listeners? How many do you have, Rosemary? He's just asking. We've got more callers. How many books do you have?
I don't know. You might have to contact Paul Coates at...
Can we say 10?
Yes, you can say 10. Contact Black Classic Press and tell them that people in the area want the book and maybe they can work something out.
Well, Rosemary, we didn't plan this, listeners. This happened organically because I'm sitting here with my book, and when Mike grabbed it to show Jerry, like, well, why don't we give this as a pledge? You said it. Listeners, you can connect with Cuba two ways. Number one, through the story of Fidel and Malcolm X, this powerful meeting, 800-222-9739. And also, through the Vince Ramos Brigade Challenge, I want to thank my friend Rosemary for joining us. We are so elated. She gave up her yoga session for us this morning. So let's make it worth it. I understand the phones are jumping off the hook.
Gwen, I have one last thing. I have five, I can't sell the Spanish ones in the country because of the blockade, but I will throw in five of the Spanish language copies of the book that was just published. So if there's anybody who'd like, five people who would like to have a copy in Spanish, let me know and I can do that.
And that is authenticated, published by Cuba. Whoa. So with that, we have, you know, Rosemary, we're going to be joined by Justice Book Publishers, who were part of our fabulous delegation. We have Wade and Cheryl Hudson, who are going to join us. They are the premier producers of children's books, Black literature for children. And they also joined us in Cuba, and the delegation of Black publishers and writers who joined Rosemary at this really just amazing, not only the book fair, but the panel when Rosemary talked about the book and just the whole environment of being in Cuba. It is truly an uplifting, transformative kind of trip. So I urge all of you listeners to stay tuned. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, Wade and Cheryl Hudson will be on our air. Folks, don't go anywhere. And while we're having the public service announcement, 800-222-9739, 202-588-9739. You can get that Spanish for $75 if you want the Spanish edition, $65 for the English version. So join us. Let's go for the social service, social justice calendar, folks, and we'll be right back. Don't you go.
Give yourself a special gift to improve your eyesight. Pledge to PFW for the Natural Vision Improvement Self-Healing Package. Millions of Americans have vision problems, with rates increasing among both children and adults. Computers, smartphones, sitting all day, and not getting out in nature to catch the sun and the stars all contribute to eye strain. Yet simple steps can make a big difference. For a pledge of $75, you will receive the book, Vision for Life, 10 Steps to Natural Eyesight Improvement, together with a 45-minute audio CD. A $100 pledge will get you a 5-CD audio set covering topics such as the spine, the joints, and relaxing the eyes. For a $150 pledge, you will receive both the book and CD plus the 5-CD audio set. All parts of the body need exercise for optimal health, and the eyes are no different. The Natural Vision Package was put together for us by Dr. Meir Schneider, a pioneering therapist who healed himself from blindness and developed a unique holistic approach to health, highly respected by Dick Gregory, medical doctors, and PFW listeners alike. WPFW Jazz and Justice Radio improves your world vision. We can also help strengthen your physical vision. Call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. You can also pledge online at WPFWFM.com. www.mariaconcepcion.org to receive the 150 Natural Vision Package.
Okay, listeners, I am back, and I am so thrilled. The couple with the power. Good morning, Wade and Cheryl Hudson.
Gwen, how are you? Just be on the high from our trip to Cuba.
Excellent. I need to just say, listeners, five and five, we have five Spanish versions and five English versions of Fidel and Malcolm X left. If you call 202-588-9739 or out of the area 800-222-9739, again, that book can be yours for a pledge of $65 for the English version, $75 for the Spanish version, which was published by a Cuban publishing house. So speaking of publishing, Cheryl, you there with us too, dear?
I am here and happy to be here to speak with you, Gwen.
Thank you very much. I want to, first of all, Wade and I have been Facebook friends for a long time, but we never got a chance to meet in person. So it was truly an honor to meet the two of you and to learn about Just Us Books. What an amazing thing. You all have been married for, is it 47
years? 46. Going on 47 in June.
Okay.
Yes, well,
claim 47 for time served, okay? and have been in business, married in business for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wowee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wowee. Yeah. How did this marriage of business start? Why don't you all, I mean, you can pick Wade or Cheryl, one of you, tell, or both of you, tell us how this marriage of books started.
Cheryl, you want to?
Well, you know, it's been an organic kind of process.
Cheryl, if you can speak up just a little louder, dear.
Okay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's really been a wonderful process on both sides. Wade and I met in 1971. We married in 1972. We started our company in 1988. But in between our marriage and even before our marriage, we had collaborated on a number of book projects. Wade is a writer. I'm a graphic artist. And we had combined our
You're breaking up, Cheryl. You there?
I'm so sorry. Yes, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Yes.
Okay. So we collaborated on some creative projects, working with children, manuscripts, poetry, and graphic design. And I had worked in the publishing industry, working with school books, textbooks, for about 15 years, actually, before we started our company. But along, we had created a number of children's book products, which we could not get published by the major commercial houses.
Why couldn't you? Why couldn't you?
I think we can answer part of that.
Yeah, I think what it was,
question.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Gwen?
Yep.
Yeah, I think what, you know, they did not see a market. Publishers did not see, major publishers didn't see a market. And obviously, they were misguided. Because they were not paying attention. They didn't think of the black book buying public as viable. So rather than trying to convince them to publish the manuscripts that we had, we decided to take a step of faith ourselves and start our own company and publish the books ourselves. And actually, we stand on the shoulders of many black folks who've gone before us to start publishing imprints, you know. So even though we are the only, at this point, the only independent black-owned publishing company focusing on books for children, the Brownie Books was published back in the 1920s by the NAACP and other publishing efforts. You know, the first black newspaper, 1827, Freedom Journal. So we were standing on the shoulders of those who come before us and shown us the way. So we knew that we had to take our own destiny, our own future in our own hands, and to make these books available because we recognize how sorely needed they were in our communities.
Okay. And so, Wade, that you're saying something really important, that there is a certain market. You two are parents. That's kind of what drove some of this. Is that not right, Cheryl?
Yes, it really is. We have two children who are actually adults now, Keturah and Stefan. And in the early days of our mission, we were really trying to find children's books and materials to decorate their rooms and things to affirm their identity. And it was very difficult to do that. So we've basically done a number of publications in their names. And actually, the Afrobets kids, there are six of them who are branded in a series of books that we've published, are named for our children. Torah is one of them. Steph is one. Nandi is another. And they represent children that are children of our friends and children in our neighborhood that we know.
And, you know, if I can, for a moment, it's not really a digression because it's very related. You two were with us in Cuba, and Cuba has a nearly 100% literacy rate, folks.
Yes.
Nearly 100%. Yes. And that book fair that we attended was evidence of that. I want to just say this, if I can just depart for a moment to keep the lights on, that I understand I am just $125 away from my target in the pledge drive. Cuba.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yes, guys.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I need
Make
you to
those
call.
Calls. Make those calls.
Call 202-588-9739. 800-222-9739. You all were there for the launch of Rosemary's Spanish edition of the book, Fidel and Malcolm, Memories of a Meeting. And guess what? We're giving away the book.
That's great.
Can just get three callers to call for the English version, that's how many we have left. Rosemary pledged 10 books. She gave them to us. We need to tell her we appreciate it. 202-588-9739, 800-222-9739. And if you call, give us a call. The book will be yours. And we are with a fabulous couple. We are talking with Cheryl and Wade Hudson, who are tell us a little bit about the inaugural edition of your book, about the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s and the stuff that little kids need to know. Tell us a little bit about that, Cheryl.
Well, the first book that we published, and we did this on our own, learning as we go about publications and ISBNs and all of that, was the Afrobets ABC book. And we started with the ABC book because our children were young and we wanted to represent the alphabet with Afrocentric themes. So A is for apple, Africa, and alligator. And basically it's a concept book that introduces six children who wrap themselves in shapes of letters of the alphabet. And on each page, a child can identify an object, something from Africa or related to Africa, and perhaps an animal.
Wow. Now, one of the things about this, so this was like 30 years ago, 29 years for the 1, 2, 3, ABC, 30 years ago. But it's timeless, isn't it?
Well,
yes. In fact, the ABC book continues to sell. Actually, Gwen, almost all of the books that we published hundreds over the years, the vast majority of those books are still in print and they still sell.
They can go online to Just Us Books?
We have an online store. It's justusbooksonlinestore.com is the address for it. And we also have a regular website, and that's www.justusbooks.com.
So,
but, you know, the books are also available in stores, most stores around the country. And we encourage people to buy from black stores and independent stores, even though the book is a, the books are available at Amazon.com, but we really encourage, because for us, you know, Just Us Books is a business, but we sort of see ourselves as an institution as well. And so we want to encourage other black businesses that are becoming institutions that, you know, so it's not just about us, it's about lifting the community and also being an example for young people who are coming behind us. That we can take our own destiny in our own hands.
Taking so our destiny. I have to just take a moment and thank some generous listeners who have pledged, who now own Fidel and Malcolm X. Kenneth.
Oh, that's wild.
Grace. Yeah. Chevy Chase. Camille Bethesda. James in Fort Washington. Linda in Bethesda. I am told I just have $35 left to go. Will you call? Actually, can you make it 65? Please call 202-588-9739 or 800-222-9739. And two more people to thank. Delita from Germantown. Alita from Germantown. And Anne from D.C. Thank you, guys. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that, because freedom ain't free. And one of the things that, Wade, you said that was really important in your telling of how you all got started is that storytelling is preserving the who we are as a people. What do you?
That's exactly correct, Gwen. And I think what has happened over the centuries, other folks have been telling our stories for us. They've been putting forth their own particular narrative about who we are, what it's about. And again, that's why Freedom Journal was started in 1827. The editorial said we wish to plead our own cause because others have been speaking for us for so long. So we want to have our own voice. And that's so crucial so we can define who we are. We can determine where we are going for ourselves rather than others speaking for us and defining who we are.
Now, one of the things that, Cheryl, I think you all do very well, you have a family-run business. Tell us a little bit about how who's involved in your publishing house and how that works.
Well, actually, Wade is the president and CEO and is in charge of sales and distribution and rights. I am the editorial director, which means I'm involved with dealing with authors, illustrators, and the production of the actual content and the actual physical book. Keturah Hudson is the director of marketing. That's our daughter, and she deals with social media and marketing of the titles. And Stefan, who is a great photographer and graphic designer, has documented and actually is a photographer who has documented and also published books with us as well and is involved with our website and graphic design. So it is a family-run business. We do hire and deal with freelance editors, proofreaders, copy editors, production people, typesetters, and all of the other people that are needed to put a book together, but it is a family-owned business.
Well, you know, that's so, so inspiring. And, Wade, when you talked about we wish to plead our own cause, as an alum of the Black Press, as a reporter, I like to say as a star reporter many, many years ago in Philadelphia, I know that theme very well. And I guess we trod forward in the spirit of Ida B. Wells and all of those really important journalists.
Yes.
I think for you too, you're a real inspiration. I mean, 30 years keeping this going, this little train that could. What is your advice to authors and people who are interested in publishing and self-publishing? What would you tell them?
Well, for interested in publishing and starting a company, the first thing I would suggest is to do a business plan. we've run into a number of people who want to start their publishing company, and what they tend to do is just publish a book. Well, they have not thought about how to market, how to distribute. And there's so much information now that's available to be used to help you develop a marketing plan, a business plan, so you know where you're going. That business plan becomes like a roadmap for you, even though you may make changes along the way, but it can point you in the right direction and help you look in the future to project some things that could happen or could not happen. So that's the first thing. Secondly, it just, as I said, there's so much information because there's so many different aspects of publishing. It's not just producing a book, but it's also getting the book distributed. And there's a infrastructure that's out there to help you get the book distributed. There are distributors and wholesalers who sell the bookstores, and a lot of bookstores will not buy directly from you as an author, self-published author. They go through distributors and wholesalers. There's the educational market that's out there, and then that's viable. And there are distributors and wholesalers who sell to that market. And then you have to factor in publicity and promotion. You're actually getting the book out in the public so people know that there is a book available. So there's a lot of work that's involved, and it's labor intensive. So I think most of us who are in publishing, and I think some of our friends like Paul Coates and Anki Mark Butte, who are on Third World Press, and Paul has Black Classic Press, will tell you that they are in it, love it, and they know it's important because it is making a difference. It's getting our stories out there. So it is nothing to sneeze over. You have to really understand that it is a business and that it is work.
And for our children, because this is the one thing that you two do that is so vital. I mean, you produce literature for children, but also the niche is Black children. Cheryl, would you say that that whole trajectory has changed the world since you all started? Has it changed? Is it different? Is it the same or what?
There are a lot of things that are the same in terms of the process, but I think that the difference is that when Just Us Books started in 1988, there were very few authors of color and indigenous authors who were being published by the major companies. Since that time, a lot of those major companies have merged, but Just Us Books devoted our whole mission to reaching African-American children. So we have concept books, we have picture books, we have biographies. The Book of Black Heroes from A to Z has sold over a million copies, and that was one of the first biographies that it was a collective biography of 49 Black heroes rather than the same ones that were being produced over and over again, George Washington Carver or Booker T. Washington. So we had a collection of 49 Black heroes. So I think that Just Us Books has probably made an impact in terms of the quality and the quantity and the range of books that we have. Again, I said that they're biographies. We have books of poetry. We have books for middle readers. We have chapter books, books for younger readers. And our audience has grown up with us. So I think that's made an impact on what major publishers have done. Major publishers have come and actually used some of the artists and illustrators that we first published.
So I have to just say this, and as we're wrapping up, I want to just applaud you two, congratulate you for just staying the course and also for laying the ground for our future, because that's what our children are. So I just hats off and salute. And with that, we are wrapping up. I want to give you each 10 seconds apiece to kind of give a parting shot. Wade first, and then Cheryl right behind him.
Yeah, well, I just want to thank you, Gwen, for this opportunity. And want to encourage our listeners to support those Black institutions that are trying to build a legacy and to lift our communities, whether they are publishing companies, bookstores, or whatever. We need to support each other. So I encourage our listeners to to really understand how important that is.
Thank you so much. And Cheryl, to you?
Well, I would just say that readers are achievers, and we support our children. We know that they are our future, so we encourage parents to buy books and start their own personal libraries at home, and also use the public library, look for our books, and look for other books that express an authentic African and African-American experience. And we thank you so much for hosting us and for letting us talk about what we love, which is books.
And I thank you both. What a wonderful high note to end on. And guess what, Cheryl and Wade, I have no more Fidel and Malcolms.
Woo-hoo.
We
That's
have
wonderful.
Basically, and I've been told I have exceeded my goal.
Congratulations. Wow, that is awesome. That is awesome.
As well.
So thank you, Gwen. Thank you so much.
And to you both, blue skies and happy days. Thank you
so much. And it's so great to connect with you in person rather than on Facebook.
Yes, absolutely. So, yes. Listeners, this concludes our Arise segment today. I want to thank you all for all of your generosity. We have Dolores from Columbia, Maryland, Betty from Bowie. Thank you so much to everyone who has pledged. And if you have not pledged, even though we don't have any more books, you still have the station. You still have the voices. Our air is not free. So please pledge what you can. 202-588-9739, 800-222-9739. Thank you for allowing me to come into your world for this hour. Have a great weekend. Arise.